Thanks for checking out the latest episode of the Spencer on Sports podcast. Heard weekday afternoons from 2 to 3 on KGYM.
Back again, Tuesday edition of Spencer on Sports with you here on 1600 AM KGYM. Also find us on the FM dial 102.3 in Cedar Rapids, 106.3 in Iowa City and Coralville. Of course, streaming worldwide, KGYMradio.com. Click the big purple and white Listen Live Now graphic. Once you do that, the internet stream will fire up and you'll probably be hearing the sound of my voice. If you're not, then I don't know how to help you. 319-366-1600. Talk or text line open for you here on a Tuesday afternoon, 8th day of August of 2023. Should mention as well, you should grab the free to download KGYM Sports Radio app in your app store. You can also find us streaming there. Spencer Wagon, my name, producer Isaac, along for the ride as well. And as I mentioned, 319-366-1600. Live from the Circus Sports Iowa studios for the next hour here on KGYM. Lots to get to. We'll dive into a little NFL conversation. I had this thought pop in my head. We haven't really talked about the rookie quarterback class for 2023 all that much. My question, and I'll pose this to you now. We'll dive into it before 3 o'clock. Which rookie quarterback is poised to have an impactful year? Some of you might say Bryce Young. Some of you might say C.J. Stroud. Some of you might go down the list and say Max Duggan, for whatever reason, the seventh-round pick of the Chargers. If he's an impactful quarterback, then I think something has gone seriously wrong with the Los Angeles Chargers and their quarterback depth. But who knows? I'll open the floor to you with that coming up in just a little bit. Also, interesting NFL story I found involving a quarterback who's on a new team this year. He has a chance to make some history, although the wrong kind of history. We'll tell you about that before three as well. Talk a little Major League Baseball. The postseason schedule is out. That means, well, we're almost done with the grind that is the Major League Baseball season, all 162 games of it. When's the postseason going to start? Well, it starts in October. There you go. I've finished the segment. We haven't even started it, but we'll get to the scheduling of the postseason, kind of break that down for you, take a look at the scores and schedule for today and tonight. There is one game set to begin this afternoon. Some nasty weather out east has created a doubleheader today for the Phillies and the Washington Nationals. Game one of two out at Citizens Bank Park set to begin 3:05 Central. We'll lead you into the start of that contest if you're so inclined to check that out. Get that for you coming up here in just a little bit. Going to start, though, with where we've started the last several days, and that has to do with conference realignment. I feel like a lot of people still figuring out just exactly what things are going to look like going forward here starting in 2024. And saw ESPN's Heather Dinich on Twitter, X, again, I'm still not sure what we're calling it, but Twitter X, just combine it all into one. Well, why not? Saw her tweet this or post this, that, and I agree with her, that this is one of those years, and I think I heard Todd Brommelkamp say this the other day too. If you love college football, you love, you know, just how things are right now, and you just want to take it all in before the big changes happen and things get even more unrecognizable in 2024 with this latest round of conference realignment that's going on. Just really take it all in, starting from week zero all the way through the end of the season and even the bowl season, because a lot of changes are coming. Are they for the better? Not sure, but changes are coming. And it's inevitable that these changes are coming, whether we like them or not. And really, I think that's some advice that I'm going to be taking to enjoy college football to the fullest, even if some of the things you don't like about it maybe cloud your view at times here in 2023. It's going to be interesting to see this season play out, that is for sure, and just a couple weeks away from the start of it with week zero. But interesting stuff. We'll get into the Big Ten here. I saw this Bill Bender from the Sporting News put together a nice piece about just what the heck's going to happen to the Big Ten. And a lot of questions that still out there, a lot of things they could do, A lot of things they might not do with now 18 teams in the Big Ten, and who knows if 18 is where they stop. It's a topic maybe for another day. I don't know. We can get into that today, too. But still plenty of questions as to how this is going to look, and Bill Bender from the Sporting News kind of broke it down earlier today with a nice look at rivalries and weighing the impact of a 10-game conference schedule versus a 9-game conference schedule and what that would mean for the league. So we'll talk about that here in just a moment. Got to do our daily check-in with producer Isaac. What's new over there?
Nothing really. Just looking around online, websites, on X, as for what X. We were just talking about. Yeah.
And so I've noticed, and this is, we don't need to go into the whole brand transition from Twitter to X, but the blue button where it used to say tweet, and this is not a new thing, but it says post.
Yeah, it says repost.
And when you retweet, you repost it. And now instead of quote tweeting it, you're just quoting it. It's just, I don't understand. I don't want to get into the whole thing with Elon Musk, because I know there's some very strong opinions about what he bought Twitter for and what he didn't buy Twitter for. I don't want to get into that. This is a politics-free zone, but I just don't understand, and I'm not a brand expert by any means. I know a good deal about branding because I work in radio, and KGYM Sports Radio is a brand, so part of my job here and your job as well and Todd's job and Scott and Mark is to stay consistent with our brand as a sports talk radio station, but going from a well-recognized company in Twitter to now just X and
yeah.
Post. We're still calling it retweet. I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, you turned your website name into an action. I don't know how many websites were able to accomplish that, and then you got rid of that. I don't know. Just to me, doesn't seem like the smartest
yes.
idea. But then again, I don't have billions of dollars.
Yes,
so
that you could
whatever.
Just throw at a social media company.
Correct, yeah.
What if you could bring back, if you had all the money in the world and you could buy a social media company or bring back a social media company, well, what would you buy or bring back? Would you bring back, were you ever on MySpace?
I was not, but that was okay. The first one that came to mind is, can you imagine if MySpace became the most popular thing again?
Tom from MySpace, where's he at?
Is
he, the one dude, like you added, you got MySpace back in the day, and there's people listening to the show, they're like, what's MySpace? Oh, boy.
I thought that there was, at some point last year or something like that, MySpace almost came back. Like, there was some sort of, like,
oh, boy.
People higher usage for like a month or something. There were more people using MySpace and then nothing came of it. But I remember seeing that.
It was a long time ago and I somehow gained access to my MySpace profile. This was like over 10 years ago. I was bored in college and I'm like, somebody was on the topic of MySpace and it just became like, I wonder if I could still access it. And somehow I remembered the password and it showed up, but there was like nothing on there.
Yeah,
it was just like weird, like bands and stuff, and I'm like, talk about bad rebrands, right?
I mean, yeah.
Facebook, you know, essentially took away the audience on MySpace, and then MySpace is like, hey, I know what to do. Let's make this a platform for bands, and that's fine if you want to, you know, increase like visibility of music and artists and have them a place to share their content. That's fine, but like, completely sabotage what you were to totally pivot hard right. Pun not intended. No pun part of that, but I don't know. But anyways.
I'll let you get to the
have
sports
fun.
There.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Sorry, no. I got you
I
to a far off track.
Some folks, certain listener who listens but does not listen to the Todd Brommelkamp show is already chiming in about Elon Musk on the text line. So I think we should move on to sports. It's 2:13, and we'll let Isaac go through his ex posts on Twitter and check in with him later on in the show. But as I mentioned, starting off with conference realignment, Bill Bender. No, not Bill Barr. Man, we are way off track here. Bill Bender from the Sporting. My apologies to Bill Bender. I don't think he wants to be associated with Bill Barr, but Bill Bender of the Sporting News had a great piece earlier today. I'll let you read the whole thing, obviously, if you're listening to the show. But it talks about what's the Big Ten going to do? And this is a really interesting point of this time for the Big Ten, right? Because okay, we were going to move forward. We're going to have 16 initially. We had so much made of USC and UCLA. coming in and a new era of Big Ten football, and there was still kind of this thing hanging over, like, doesn't seem like they're done adding teams, and turns out we were all right, and now it's 18 teams for 2024 with Washington and Oregon coming in. And a lot of questions still floating out there. ESPN's Adam Rittenberg also kind of diving into this, and I don't want to spoil what he has to say because I know he's scheduled to join the gym class coming up today between 3 and 4. But when it comes down to it, one of the big questions, and I know I've talked about this before in the show, is the Big Ten, are they going to go back to divisions? It seems like it would make sense. I floated that out there on the show last week when we were talking about kind of the initial rumblings, the initial shockwave of this move of Washington and Oregon coming into the Big Ten. And it seemed to make sense at the time that, man, you know, you're adding two more West Coast teams. Yeah, I know the Big Ten has said, hey, we're going away from, you know, we're going away from these divisions. We're all one big happy family coming up here in 2024. Does it make sense to scrap that idea? Well, ESPN's Adam Rittenberg, as relayed by Bill Bender from the Sporting News, reporting that the Big Ten is not going to return to a divisional format. So if you were really hoping, you were praying and hoping that the legends and leaders would come back, I have bad news. At least according to Adam Rittenberg, the legends and leaders or any form of the Big Ten divisionals are not coming back, at least according to his sources. Of course, Legends and Leaders was around from 2011 to 2013. East and West showed up in 2014. And this year, of course, is the last year in which the Big Ten will have East and West, which then goes into the conversation we've had as we've, you know, done our initial previews of the Iowa football season. Great setup for Iowa to win the Big Ten West this year if they can make it through and make it to Indy for one final time and one final crack at a Big Ten championship here in 2023. It certainly would behoove them to do that because the Big Ten does become one big happy family in the standings, and we're likely heading toward the Big Ten championship game, barring some sort of crazy upset or one of the two teams falling off their pedestal, heading towards Ohio State, Michigan, right? For a back-to-back, essentially, appearance in the national scene. You've got their rivalry game on the last week of the college football season going into championship week. All signs pointing to, again, unless one team seriously falls off the pedestal, that you're likely going to see those two teams back-to-back. I would assume next year we'll see how, of course, it all plays out. But that goes into the question about, well, protected rivalries, and we've already been through this, and the teams and the rivalry matchups that the Big Ten has chosen to be important to the conference. And again, it's up for debate, and I think we've all kind of settled on, and Isaac, you and I had this conversation a few months ago when the Big Ten put out their initial 2024 schedule about the protected rivalries, and I think we came to the consensus that Iowa's protected rivals, and this is what Bill Bender shows up or lists here for the Sporting News article here, protected rivals for Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Wisconsin. So if you're going to keep those games every year, that's three games out of the 9 or 10, where do you go from there? And how do you work in now not only two teams on the West Coast, but four teams on the West Coast? And when you look at it and you fill all the pieces together and you kind of think logistically about this, it seems to make more and more sense that if now the Big Ten is going to have essentially a West Coast division, the true Big Ten West, as I've called it, seems to make sense that you go to 10 games. Does it not? Like, 9 games is one thing if you truly want to keep the non-conference, you know, the three non-conference games, and you want to ensure that, you know, maybe you get those 7 home games that we hear schools talk so much about. Maybe you do go to 10, and then that puts into question what constitutes a non-conference schedule with a 10-game Big Ten schedule. There's a lot of pieces to this puzzle that still have to be essentially put together, essentially figured out here. But all signs pointing to, at least in my opinion, that this is going to be a 10-game schedule. And Bill Bender does a good job kind of laying it out and how you're not making one team stay out of the West. If you go to divisions, right, if you have a West division or a West pod, if you will, you can't just have a four-team division, right? You're going to have to peel in some other teams, and the closest teams to USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon are Nebraska, are Minnesota, are Iowa, you know? So it seems to make sense that you would maybe scrap the divisional idea, but then go into a 10-team schedule. And, you know, that begins the question of how does the non-conference look? How do you fit together a schedule that you could still get some wins in a more challenging schedule? Like if you're a, say, for example, Iowa, and you're scheduled to play Oregon and USC and Ohio State in the same schedule, which, you know, we don't know how that's going to play out yet, but can you still balance it out with some games that, I don't want to call them cupcakes, but essentially they're cupcakes, right? You want to make sure you can get to that 6-win threshold if that's enough to get you to a bowl game. Or if you have a rather special season for your team, whether you're Iowa or someone else, and you feel like you have a pretty good chance to maybe get an at-large to an expanded playoff field, how do you make sure that you can prepare yourself adequately, but at the same time, not necessarily do what the SEC does, right, where they play, you know, the Austin Peas of the world and the Citadel or whatever ahead of the rivalry week, but still get your guys work, get your starters some rest at the same time, and kind of play that kind of game within the game. So it really is an interesting discussion, but ultimately I think, and again, time will tell with all this, but I think you're heading to 10 conference games and the 2 non-conference games going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how. If it's not this go-round on expansion that you get 10 conference games, it's certainly going to be the next one because this is far from done, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I just don't know how you would be able to get all of the teams in consistently where you play every other team on a fairly often basis without a 10-game conference schedule. And so, yeah, there is a conversation to be had with your non-conference games there. I mean, and unfortunately, I think you would look at playing weaker teams that aren't in another, I guess Power Four conference, I suppose, is mm-hmm. what it's going to be. So, yeah, I agree that 10-game conference schedule seems inevitable. Again, if it's not this go-round, it'll be certainly when there's 22 teams in the Big Ten.
Bender suggests, so you have your 3 protected rivals, and then you alternate 7 schools in a home and away fashion each year. And I think that's the most equitable way to do it. You know, you add in an extra game against a conference opponent. There's more teams in your conference. You want to make sure that, you know, while you might not play the Illinois, the Northwesterns, some of the other schools that you're used to seeing, you still want to give yourself an extra shot at maybe maintaining a little bit of a semblance of a rivalry there. If that's not going to be your protected rival going forward, or one of your protected rivals going forward. And then you essentially just play it out that way. And you get the schedule you get. And, you know, some years, I mean, you've seen this already, even with the West and East divisions. I mean, you look at, you know, Iowa's schedule last year, they had both Michigan and Ohio State on their schedule. This year, Penn State essentially is their toughest game. We don't want to discount Wisconsin, don't want to discount, you know, even Minnesota or another Big Ten West rival, but it seems to be the most equitable, I can say that word, I swear, a way to break it all down. And it seems like something that at least the Big Ten, maybe in the short term, would look at. I'm not sure they'd ever go to, like, all conference all the time. That doesn't seem to make sense, especially in a league where, you know, you have the haves and you have the have-nots, right? And then that's just true for the Big Ten. It's true for all of college football. Every conference has teams that are really good. Every conference has teams that are kind of in the middle. Every conference has teams. I'm getting my words mixed up in my brain, but every conference has teams that are bottom feeders. That's just the truth of it, and that's only going to be highlighted even more as we get more and more teams in these conferences. You know, you're adding USC. For as much as, you know, people who followed the Big Ten all their lives, like, you and I and the rest of the people here, and I'm sure some of you listeners out there have as well, as much as you don't think of USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon as Big Ten schools, they're great additions when it comes to on the football field. Don't get me wrong. They're fantastic additions when it comes to the quality of the product that you get on the field. What does that mean for, you know, team that's been in the news a lot lately, Northwestern? Team coming off a 1-11 season, projected to finish last this year in the Big Ten West. Rutgers, Maryland, whose, you know, high water mark is what, like 8-4, 7-5, 6-6, probably at best. Purdue, even Indiana, you know, a team that a lot of hype was surrounding them in the 2020 season. 2020 was just a weird year, and even going into 2021, we saw what happened as they came into Iowa City, and Riley Moss did what he did down at Kinnick Stadium that year where they opened up with Big Ten play. It's going to be interesting to see this move forward with the haves and the have-nots, especially in the conference. And, you know, there was a whole other conversation about it that sprung up with, you know, promotion and relegation and kind of stuff like that. Is there ever a point where the Big Ten is going to be like, well, sorry, Rutgers, you're done? And I just don't see that happening either. I don't think, for as ruthless as I feel like this can be, like, you know, poaching teams, and you have the Big Ten out here, you know, saying, well, we don't want to be the one that kills the Pac-12. And then they ultimately, as we've learned more about this whole process and how this played out, it was essentially the Big Ten who restarted negotiations with Washington and Oregon that ended up killing the Pac-12 because as they left, so did Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah. If you heard the press conference from the Utah or from the Arizona athletic director and the president yesterday, he's like, yeah, we thought we were going to get this done. And then Oregon's athletic director is like, yeah, we're gone. It's like, well, the Big Ten did it, whether you know, they say they didn't want to or not. But it's, I don't think you could ever get to that point. You know, like I said, with how ruthless this has become with the Big Ten and with conference realignment and such. But this there's still plenty of questions. And you know, and we're still early in this process. We still have over a year to go before we really get into the nuts and bolts of how this is going to work. But I think there's still plenty of things to be worked out. I know there's still plenty of things to be worked out here. Again, I'll refer to Bill Bender's article, not Bill Barr. I don't know where that I was reading something on X or Twitter earlier involving former Attorney General of the United States. That's how I got that name, and one name crosses with the other. My sincerest apologies to Bill Bender, who does a fantastic job with sporting news and gets things like this to us in front of our eyeballs here in Eastern Iowa. God, that's an all-timer, I tell you. One thing too, this is interesting to point out, and Bill put this in his article too. If the Big Ten moved to 10 conference games, would that force the SEC to reevaluate their model?
Yes.
For as far as we know, they are sticking with 8 conference games, even with Texas and Oklahoma coming in next year. This is the two horse race, right? The SEC and the Big Ten. Above all, you've got the middle, well, two, I guess, the Big 12 and the ACC. And who knows if those two are poached by the others. And then you got everybody else. Does this say to the SEC, well, maybe you guys got to move to 9 at the very least, or does it move to 10?
Absolutely. I think they would at least move to 9, if not follow suit with 10, because they already get so much flack for having 8.
Yes, absolutely.
And if the Big Ten would be like, we're adding great, you know, great football
programs.
Well,
look at
programs.
Us. We're playing Washington and Oregon while you guys are playing UT Chattanooga.
Yeah.
Well, no disrespect to the Mocs, but
they would,
just is what it is.
They would probably be opening up. A lot of teams in the Big Ten would probably be opening up first game of the season against a Big Ten opponent, because they already do that in some cases, like Nebraska and Minnesota. This year, I believe, is a week one game. So, absolutely, I think the SEC would be forced to at least have 9, if not also go to 10. Because, again, you just can't – Big Ten, it would just be something that the Big Ten would be able to hold over the SEC, be like, we play such a harder schedule than you guys do. And even though the SEC still will say, well, we're the best conference, every game is so much more difficult, not when you're – playing, you know, the Citadel or someone like that, and right before your rivalry weekend.
For the record, this is, I don't know if this is the full schedule, but week 12 in the SEC, you have Georgia and Tennessee, which is obviously the highlight game there. You also have Texas A&M and Abilene Christian. I had no idea Alabama was playing UT Chattanooga, but they actually are in week 12. Arkansas and FIU, Florida International. LSU hosting the Panthers of Georgia State. Auburn hosting Jerry Kill and New Mexico State. And you've got Ole Miss and ULM in week 12. That is before week 13, where the SEC brings us the Egg Bowl, the Iron Bowl. You've also got Clemson, South Carolina, which I think has got some new juice to it after what happened last year in Clemson. You've got clean old-fashioned hate, or good old-fashioned hate, clean old-fashioned hate, whatever. Georgia and Georgia Tech. You've also got LSU and A&M and Vandy and Tennessee the next week. But you've got Auburn playing New Mexico State. All New Mexico State had a good year last year for New Mexico State standards, and you've got them playing Auburn the week before the Iron Bowl. Probably, unless Auburn just has another awful year like they did last year in the final gasps of the Brian Harsin era. Yeah, I don't see the point for the SEC to continue doing that, but they probably will, and they're the SEC, and no one will bat an eye. And
I think money wise, they have to. I think it'll be a big selling point for the Big Ten to say we have a lot higher quality games than the SEC or any other conference does, and so the SEC will have to increase that number so they can keep up and also have that sort of selling point.
319-366-1600. See a couple texts coming in. We'll get to those coming up in just a bit. We are overdue for a break. What say you, 10 conference games for the Big Ten, yay or nay? You can chime in on the talk or text line at 319-366-1600. Back after this, Spencer on Sports on KGYM.
Eastern Iowa weather on the gym.
I'm meteorologist Rebecca Kopelman with your weather first forecast, and we're going to have a mix of sun and clouds today. Temperatures will be in the low 80s. Humidity will be tolerable, really not bad. It may feel a bit toasty this afternoon, though. As we head into tonight, we'll have clouds building in, and temperatures are going to drop into the low 60s. Rain chances will be increasing tomorrow morning, mainly after 9 to 10 a.m. Scattered showers and storms will be on and off, and temperatures will be held down to the upper 70s. That's your latest Iowa's News Now weather first forecast.
Multi-award winning hip-hop icon, Ludacris, live in concert. See Ludacris performing at the Iowa State Fair Grandstand in Des Moines, Friday, August 18th. Get tickets now at the Iowa State Fair ticket office or online at iowastatefair.org. Convenience fees apply to all tickets. Don't miss Ludacris for one night only, live at the Iowa State Fair Grandstand. Give it to me
now. The Black Keys Dropout Boogie Tour. August 14th, 8 p.m., Iowa State Fair Grandstand in Des Moines. With special guest, the Velveteers, the Black Keys, live and loud. Reserve tickets on sale now through iowastatefair.org and at the Iowa State Fair ticket office. Convenience fees apply to all tickets.
The biggest pro football contests in Vegas are back and bigger than ever, with $14 million in guaranteed prizes, only at Circa Sports. Enter Nevada, play from anywhere.
Two ways to win and no rake. Play Circa Million, make five picks against the spread each week with quarterly and full season payouts, or join Circa Survivor, where you select one team each week straight up, last the longest to win it all.
$14 million in guaranteed prizes. Visit CircaSports.com for details.
What amazing feat can you accomplish in 2 seconds? You can shoot the winning shot of the championship game. You can rocket 110 feet into the sky in the world's fastest elevator. You can even perfect your yodel. But maybe the most monumental feat you can accomplish in 2 seconds is saving a life, your life, just by buckling your seatbelt. Click it or ticket. This message brought to you by the Iowa Governor's Traffic Safety Bureau.
Make sure your cooling system is ready for the long haul this summer with preventative maintenance from E&J Geothermal. This smart step keeps you ahead of frustrating emergencies, is proven to extend the life of your cooling system, and can catch a small issue before it turns into a huge expense. Plus, E&J Geothermal is an expert in helping maintain your cooling system. Don't let the summer heat win. Schedule preventative maintenance today or ask E&J Geothermal about installing a new energy-efficient Climate Master geothermal system. Find out more at ejgeothermal.com.
2:34, Spencer on Sports back to you here on a Tuesday, August 8th of 2023, 319-366-1600. Take you up till 3 o'clock, gym class on the way between 3 and 4. Todd Brummel camp in between 4 and 6. Poll question for you, KGYMradio.com, has to do with two of the remaining four Pac-12 teams. Well, they're not even the Pac-12 anymore, they're the Pac-4, I guess, but where will Stanford and Cal end up after 2023? Are they going to be in the ACC? Yes, that is a serious question. ACC reportedly having a exploratory call earlier today. We might dive into that here in just a little bit. But will they end up the ACC? Will they end up in the Big Ten? Will they end up in a new-look Pac-12, quote-unquote? Or are they headed to the Mountain West? Those are your four options. You could vote courtesy of Hawkeye Title and Settlement. Highway 1 West in Iowa City. You can find it. Find the poll question at kgymradio.com. 319-366-1600. Talking about 10-game conference schedule for the Big Ten now that they have 18 teams. Is that the way to go? What say you? 319-366-1600. 8699, a couple texts. Appreciated as always, 8699. They agree on the protected three rivals and the rotating seven. We want to see all the Big Ten teams as frequent as possible. I think that's the best way to go about it. You know, I mean, you're not going to see, you have your protected games, and I think the three rivals that we talked about and that Bill Bender mentioned in his article with Minnesota, Nebraska, and Wisconsin, those are the three that are going to stay there. I don't see the Big Ten switching those out. Would make absolutely no sense, and things don't make sense anymore in college football to put like Washington. I mean, it doesn't, like, why would you have Washington and Iowa be a protected rival? It's like playing the Rose Bowl over and over again. Might be cool for some folks, but after a while you just scratch your head. Awful lot of travel for a rivalry game. But I think with those three, you're set there. You those guaranteed opponents, and then you just cycle through everybody home and home. And that seems, at least in my mind, to be the equitable way to do things. 4702 with a comment. Appreciate it. Every conference needs to go to the same number of conference games. Until that happens, stay at 9. I understand your point. I just don't think you're going to ever have agreement, especially with the SEC and the Big Ten. Like, the Big Ten certainly could force the SEC's hand, as we just talked about going into the break. If the Big Ten goes to 10 conference games and the SEC's still sitting there at 8, the Big Ten has a leg up and say, hey, you guys are out there playing, again, UT Chattanooga. I'm picking on the Mocs. Apologies to any UT Chattanooga alums that might be, or fans or alums that might be listening to the show today. But you guys are out there playing UT Chattanooga. We're playing conference games. And yes, you have, you know, kind of that power for the Big Ten to kind of point and laugh the Nelson Muntz kind of thing. That was my terrible Nelson Muntz from The Simpsons impersonation there. But you have that power, right, if you are the Big Ten to do that. But the SEC, I feel like they're your rivals. They're not going to budge. Maybe they will. Maybe would the SEC panic in your mind? If the Big Ten were to go to 10 conference games, are they just like, oh, the Big Ten, huh?
I don't know if panic's the right word, but I think they would have to, again, from, we've seen that money is now so important in everything related to college athletics. I think from a money standpoint, they'd be worried about the next media rights deal only having 8 while the Big Ten has 10 because of the quality of those opponents that the Big Ten has. Right. So I don't think they'd panic, but from a money standpoint and a media rights standpoint, they might be a little bit like, oh man, we have to at least go up to 9 sort of thing.
And then the SEC would then probably just point at their trophy case too.
Yeah. Also,
not to rip on the Big Ten, because I am a Big Ten fan. I enjoy the Big 12 as well. But yeah, if you the SEC is going to be like, oh, remember that time Alabama had another championship? That's kind of what they point out. It just means more, right? By the way, Georgia Tech is clean old-fashioned hate. I had it right the first time. I thought it was good old-fashioned hate, but it's clean old-fashioned hate. It's been all one-sided hate in that one lately with how good Georgia has been. Interesting question, too, from 4024. Appreciate it. 319-366-1600. How would I feel if Rutgers was kicked out? Now, I want to make it very clear. I'm not cheering for teams to get kicked out. I don't think you're ever going to come to that. I hope you don't. Like I said before, for as ruthless as this process has been, not just this process, but the entire process of realignment over the last X amount of years has been, I still feel like, at least right now, there's still this we're all in this together kind of thing, right, between schools in the conference. We're all a member of the Big Ten, regardless of whether you're going 12-0 every year and getting to the playoff, or you're struggling to win four games in the case of Rutgers. So I don't think we're at that point. I would not feel, as a fan, as someone who covers the Big Ten for a living, I would not feel good about anybody getting kicked out. But I don't see that ever becoming a thing. But I've heard other people say they think, you know, we might be at a point at some point in the near future where only the best brands survive, like an Ohio State, an Alabama, Clemson, you know. So you need to build up your brand now and show why you're worthy of it, kind of. I don't know. I feel like we're not going to be at that point, but it's, yeah.
I don't think it's ever going to get there, just because I don't think the Big Ten would ever want to lose the TVs.
Yeah.
The TV and the market there. However, I mean, Rutgers is still a decently sized, you know, fan base, even mm-hmm. though they haven't been incredibly successful since right. joining the Big Ten or anything. I don't see why the Big Ten would even want to do that, because then Rutgers is gone. Who says that, you know, the ACC doesn't try to snatch them up, or mm-hmm. SEC or someone up while they're down, something like that.
Rutgers and the SEC.
I mean, it's just, but you don't want to risk losing that sort of market there, because mm-hmm. the Rutgers will then have no reason to watch the Big Ten at all. I mean, it's different in, like, you know, soccer, where you can move down into one of the lower leagues. They still like to watch the higher leagues. If a Rutgers fan moves down into a different league, I don't think they're going to care about what's happening in the Big Ten anymore. So they wouldn't want to watch it at all.
4702, again, pointing out what essentially we just said. Rutgers is in the Big Ten because of the TV market.
Yeah.
It gives you access. It gives you the Big Ten network access to the New York, New Jersey TV market. It, you know, the on-the-field success, you know, yes, you'd like them to be bowl eligible, 6-6 or better every year, but you're not going to forfeit that TV audience now that you have that TV audience. You're not going to cede it to anybody else. That is your audience. Your conference from coast to coast is seen on TVs in New York. And that, well, as we found out, is the driving force between a lot of this. Pretty much all of it, right? Got to make the TV execs happy. Got to make sure their schedule is filled. 319-366-1600. Quick look at this. Kind of ties in with our poll question today about what's going to happen to Stanford and Cal. ESPN's Pete Thamel reporting this earlier today. The Athletic also confirming it. ACC athletic directors did meet yesterday, followed by league presidents earlier this morning, about the possibility of adding Stanford and Cal. Now, it is important to point out no offers were made. This is not something imminent, although I feel like I say that all the time, and, you know, I'm going to walk out the door of the studio here. Stanford and Cal are in the ACC. But as of right now, 2:43 p.m., Tuesday, August 8th of 2023, no offers were made, but there were a couple meetings, and they were talking about the early stages of adding possibly Stanford and Cal to the ACC, two of the final four, essentially, that are left in the ACC. ESPN's Pete Thamel weighing in on this. This is from SportsCenter. Talking about why the ACC would even look at adding teams that are on the opposite end of the country from their current footprint. Here's Pete Thamel from ESPN's SportsCenter program.
Nothing gets college presidents more excited than an affiliation with two of the most elite academic institutions in the country. Obviously, Cal, one of the premier public institutions. Stanford, obviously, one of the elite private institutions. Stanford, top to bottom, I don't think anyone would argue, has the best athletic department in the entire country. Second reason, they are distressed assets with nowhere to go right now. So I think picking up the phone and doing some vetting and exploratory talks, and sources have cautioned me, these are early talks. They are formal talks because people are getting on the phone, but they are early. They don't see a lot of drawback into at least having the chat and running out the ground ball, if you will, to see where they are.
ESPN's Pete Thamel weighing in there. Sources reporting to The Athletic that there are some within the ACC, yes, the ACC, that are open to exploring the addition of Stanford and Cal. Others in the conference don't think there is enough value to adding two far West Coast teams to the Atlantic Coast Conference. Even if they come in with reduced shares, The Athletic reporting that some are concerned that is that enough to offset the increased travel costs for everybody? Because, again, you're sending not only Stanford and Cal all the way east to play conference games, you're doing the opposite and sending teams like Miami and Florida State and Duke and Syracuse and so on west to play a conference game at Stanford or Cal, if it does indeed, if those two schools indeed join the ACC. Oregon State and Washington State are the other two, and still talk about what could happen with them. Reading something earlier today, I still talk about potential for a merger with the Mountain West, potential for the American to be in play as well. Remains to be seen, obviously, with what will happen to not just those two, but the remaining four in the Pac-12. But there were talks. The exploratory process has begun. No offers have been made, according to two different sources who spoke to The Athletic earlier today. So I guess it's one of those, again, just wait and see kind of things, because we could wake up tomorrow and, well, really, really get weird with the Stanford Cardinal and the Cal Bears being possibly in the Atlantic Coast Conference. 319-366-1600-246. We'll take a quick timeout, back with a little NFL talk after this here on KGYM.
Keep your home's exterior beautifully protected with Menard's great selection of exterior paints and stains. Dutch Boy Exterior Stain and Sealer is dirt and scuff resistant to preserve the wood's natural beauty and begins repelling rain in just 4 hours after application. Pick up a gallon of semi-transparent stain for just $35.94, plus save 11%. Now at Menards. Good through August 13th. Savings are mail-in rebate. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Save big money at Menards.
Advanced Electrical Services is looking for an experience-based journeyman and electrician helpers. This is an excellent chance to start your career or take it up a notch. You'll work full-time, year-round. Come use your skills to do high-quality work for this local, family-owned company with a positive culture and top reputation in the community. Visit advancedelectrical.com to see what they're about. Then call to set up a time to apply in person. Advanced Electrical Services in Iowa City is an equal opportunity employer. Women and minorities are encouraged to apply.
Anyone who has ever needed self-storage knows what a hassle it can be. You have to rent or borrow a truck and then find someone to help you move your stuff. And let's face it, moving furniture and heavy items without damaging them isn't easy. Renting the unit is worse. The hidden fees and admin costs are scarier than the dingy facilities you're leaving your stuff in. Why not use ClosetBox instead? ClosetBox is self-storage without leaving home. They'll pick up your belongings, store them securely, and bring any item back when you need it. The best part? Unlike traditional self-storage, you only pay for what you store. No paying for unused storage space. ClosetBox's background check storage movers are licensed, bonded, and insured, and will take care of all of the heavy lifting. ClosetBox's local storage centers are temperature controlled and monitored 24/7. ClosetBox has an A+ rating from the BBB. Call 877-233-5696 now for the season's best rates. Get $50 off first month storage using code RADIO50. That's 877-233-5696. 877-233-5696.
2:48, back at it with you. Spencer at Sports here for a few more minutes on a Tuesday afternoon. 319-366-1600. Gym class coming up in just moments. Todd Brommelkamp show on the way between 4 and 6. Listen in all this week between 4 and 6 to the Todd Brommel Camp Show for your chance to win a four-pack of tickets to the Fry Fest High Porch Block Party Concert featuring Trophy Dads and Pop Rocks. Concert coming up Friday, September 1st at the Iowa River Landing in Coralville. Todd, going to play another edition of Family Ties today. If you're the correct caller, you can identify a father or son from the sports world based on the trivia question. You'll grab that four-pack of tickets to the High Porch Block Party Concert coming up on September 1st. A couple basketball notes to get to here today. The Iowa men's basketball team over in Paris playing some exhibition ball. Hawkeyes beating the Paris All-Stars today 123-77. All 11 Iowa players scored. Peyton Sanford and Ben Cricke each had 22 in the win for Iowa. Also, Kyle Huseman from Hawkeye Report reporting the Iowa-Iowa State Cy-Hawk men's basketball game is set for December 7th in Ames. Also saying if tradition holds, that means the women's Cy-Hawk game would be the day before. That has not yet been confirmed. So as we get closer to football season, we also get closer to basketball season, and a lot of posts coming in from across the ocean with Iowa and even Iowa State playing exhibition games at this time of year. Pretty cool opportunity for both Iowa and Iowa State. 319-366-1600 at 250. You and I is over there too, if I'm not mistaken. So dive into this. We didn't get enough time. We spent a lot of time in college realignment, but Isaac, I will quiz you on this. And I think the easy answers are obviously the top two picks with Young and Stroud. But if you had to give me a name, rookie quarterbacks, 2023 class, you can go all the way down the list if you want to. If you had to name one name that you think will have the most impactful season, who do you think it would be?
I think it's going to be I'm going to lean C.J. Stroud just because Texans have, in the quarterback department, been bad.
Davis Mills.
Yeah, Davis Mills. It's not been pretty. So I think going from just nothing, obviously you had the whole Deshaun Watson stuff going on there where he had his off-the-field stuff. He also wanted to get out of Houston, that whole mess. So I'm going to go C.J. Stroud just because it's been so terrible. Again, I'm pretty high as far, not high, but I'm higher than anyone else here, I think, on Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis, okay. I believe. Again, that comes down to more the offensive system I think he's going to be put in. I also think there's a chance Gardner Minshew starts right away in Indianapolis, so that's why I wouldn't say him. And I think Stroud and Young are going to start immediately. So I'm going to lead Stroud just because the Texans quarterback play has been so, so, so bad. And I can't stress how bad it's been.
We're going to see how much of a difference maker he is. I think you're absolutely right there. Young, too, because the Panthers quarterback situation since really Cam Newton left has been just an absolute train wreck, just kind of like the Houston Texans have. I mean, Sam Darnold was there and then he left and then, you know, kind of just the cycle of, you know, what's going to happen there. Kyle Allen, I'm just trying to think of guys that they've had start games for them here.
Baker Mayfield,
yeah. Right. And he, you know, I mean, there's another story with Tampa Bay going forward with Adam Schefter has never seen the word or on a depth chart, by the way, in case you didn't see that, because Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask is listed as their initial starting quarterback for 2023. But I think it's going to be one. It's so easy to say with one and two, you know, the top two picks being quarterbacks, but those two have the best chance, obviously, because their teams have been so bad. Looking down the list, I'm interested to see Richardson because I think the Colts are going to pivot to him. I'm interested with Levis, too. Now, there have been a lot of reports, and whether they're true or not, we don't know, but that Malik Willis has been out playing him, and maybe he's a little bit behind the curve. And
Willis has had a year, though. So yeah,
Willis is a second-year quarterback.
Yeah, I would expect Willis to be ahead.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people were assuming Will Levis because there was the linking him to a top pick in the draft a few months back, and that he slid all the way to the 33rd pick, and he was first-round talent, and they got a steal with him at number 33, but interested to see that. You know, Hendon Hooker, I think he's a ways away from competing, but You know, who knows what the Lions look like. People are expecting good things out of Jared Goff again this year as the Lions are hyped up. And then it's really kind of a who knows with everybody else. I printed out the list of quarterbacks, and you look at Jake Heener all the way down to Max Duggan. I don't think anybody beyond, you know, the fourth round is going to even see the field in the regular season. I know Sean Clifford's had an impressive camp in Green Bay, so he may very well be the number two behind Jordan Love. And if he's starting, then we know something has seriously gone wrong with Jordan Love. I know a lot of people are high on Dorian Thompson-Robinson, granted for the Hall of Fame game, totally meaningless preseason game, but he had a solid showing there. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here with the quarterback class. I think it's slightly better than last year's, kind of.
Yeah.
You have a little bit more talent with Young with Young and Stroud at the top, because you had to wait till what was it, pick 20 last year for Kenny Pickett.
Right. Yeah.
So I think there's more thought of the class this year, but we'll see how it all plays out. But the two that have the best chance for an immediate impact are Young and Stroud, and then I would not be surprised if we saw Richardson going forward. I think Tennessee is contingent on Tannehill.
Yeah,
and what he does, because if he's bad, they get to Willis, and Willis is bad. You know, Willis got thrown into the fire last year, and I think that was kind of unfair to judge him. I mean, he's a rookie, right? And he was
always a developmental
in.
Guy too. Right. He was never going to be a day one sort of start guy.
So I think the same could probably be said for Levis going forward here. And you know, I think they're going to give Malik Willis every chance in the world to prove he's their guy. But maybe if things go really south in Tennessee, we see both of them. But beyond those four, it's hard to say maybe somebody gets on the field. Stetson Bennett? No.
I don't know.
Something seriously bad would have to happen in LA there. Clayton Tune, I've seen some people talking him up just because Arizona's projected to tank essentially for Caleb Williams.
I would see a lot of people tanking this year just because Caleb Williams, I think, is going to be that guy when
Caleb
he hits
Williams.
The NFL. He's getting Patrick Mahomes comps, which is a little bit unfair to him, but
right.
I can certainly see where people are coming from with that comparison as far as just talent.
Yeah. We'll see what happens with Arizona because Kyler's out for pretty much the whole year, right?
Yeah, I think at least half the season. I can't remember what I've seen, but I would be surprised if we saw him at all, just because I think Arizona will want Caleb Williams. I would want Caleb Williams.
And they have a potential to get the top two,
yeah,
right?
Because they have Houston's pick,
so
too.
They could have not only Caleb Williams, but probably Marvin Harrison Jr. in 2024 draft. So the Cardinals' stock might be going up with 2024, if that indeed is the case. But kind of tough to see anybody beyond the top four making an impact. But there's always somebody, I feel like, that surprises due to injury. I think a lot of us here in Iowa are cheering for Max Duggan. But again, like I said, top of the show, if he's on the field at any point of the regular season, something's gone seriously wrong with Justin Herbert and others in Los Angeles, that is for sure. All right, 257, we will get into probably a little bit more conference realignment tomorrow. Some interesting side pieces to what's going on in college sports here with this new wave of realignment. Get into that, take a little closer look at the NFL, get into some baseball as well coming up on the Wednesday edition of the show. Gym class is next. Again, they've got Adam Rittenberg from ESPN scheduled to join them today. Todd Brommelkamp has the chance at those tickets as well between 4 and 6. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.